From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Oprah Winfrey's powerful and moving acceptance speech at the Golden Globes last weekend immediately provoked calls for her to run for president. Coming just days after the release of Michael Wolff's best-selling book Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House, which left Americans with an even greater sense of collective disgust at Trump, perhaps Oprah's speech offered just the kind of inspiring leadership a desperate population is looking for. Well, it turns out that a Republican man from Kansas who says he did not vote for Trump had already begun the campaign to draft Oprah to run for president several months ago. And Trump himself had named Oprah as a potential running mate in 1999 on the Larry King Live show. Now, news reports are suggesting that Oprah is seriously thinking about a run for the White House. And Trump says he'd welcome the challenge. Is running for the House, Senate, or state governor no longer a path to the White House? Are candidates expected to find a television stardom and build a media empire in order to have presidential aspirations? My guest is Nicole Ashoff. She is a writer and sociologist and author of the 2015 book, The New Prophets of Capital. An excerpt from her book was published in The Guardian entitled, Oprah Winfrey, One of the World's Best Neoliberal Capitalist Thinkers. Welcome to the program, Nicole.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, of course, I feel like I'm in a little bit of a deja vu. I remember the years when George W. Bush's presidency had left Americans reeling, and then here came Senator Barack Obama, and everybody was just so happy to see somebody who was everything that George W. Bush seemed not to be. And I feel like we're kind of doing that now, that here's Donald Trump, and Oprah Winfrey is everything that Trump is not. Except, of course, like Trump, she is a television star and has a media empire, and she's also a billionaire. Shouldn't those similarities with Trump be a focus of people's, of people looking at this idea of her running for president?
Well, I think that the differences between Oprah and Trump are so wide and so great, and she's such an inspiring person, as evidenced by her Golden Globe speech, that people lose sight of the fact that she is also a billionaire, and sort of they kind of lose the ability to think critically about what it means to, again, kind of put forth and champion a billionaire as a candidate for presidency and as the kind of leader to kind of address the widespread feeling of anxiety and hopelessness that we see, particularly in the wake of, you know, it's been a year now since Trump has been president. So I think, you know, there's this real desire for something better, something different. And so it's understandable in many respects that people are latching on to the possibility of an Oprah presidency.
Tell us, let's focus on the sort of story that she has told about herself over the years that have really won her so much popularity. I mean, not only is she extremely well known throughout the country, but internationally, people know Oprah and they love Oprah. She is someone that inspires love among Republican white women, you know, one of Trump's strongest constituency. What is it about the image that she's built up about herself that inspires this?
Well, it's easy to love Oprah. I mean, she's an extremely intelligent, eloquent woman, and she really has, in a genuine way, pulled herself up from a childhood of poverty and abuse and, you know, created an empire. She's a household name. Everyone knows who Oprah is. I mean, she's not just, someone that white middle class or upper middle class women, aspire to be like. She's someone that everyone knows who she is, and we all know her story. And I think that that's really powerful and also attests to what a powerful storyteller she is.
She, as part of her media empire, has a magazine, O Magazine. And it's interesting because it's one of the few magazines that has the same person on the cover every month, herself. And in your book, or at least the excerpt that was published in The Guardian, you have an interesting a critique of this book, of the magazine, rather, that presents, that's very much in line with the kind of self-help thinking that we've seen, that, you know, you can be anybody, you can transform yourself, easy ways to get the life you want. Is that part of the Oprah story?
Oh, absolutely. I use, you know, I'm a sociologist, so I try to look for, you know, bits of data to try to support the point that I'm making. And in this excerpt, and it was, you know, from a longer article in a book that I wrote that talks not just about Oprah, but also people like the Gates and Sheryl Sandberg and John Mackey, you know, these kind of elite storytellers. So my chapter on Oprah was just one kind of analysis of a group of storytellers. And I focus on O Magazine because it's a very interesting publication. As you said, Oprah is on the cover each month, although it kind of seems to work. And when you page through the magazine, it really gives you a deep kind of sense of what the story is that she's telling. And it really is this kind of self-help narrative. And this is a very old story. It's a pervasive part of the kind of ideological, you know, kind of stories and structure that have been a part of American culture for, you know, at least 150 years.
Horatio Alger's.
Yeah, Horatio Alger. And, you know, Janice Peck has a great book called The Age of Oprah, where she really connects the Oprah phenomenon to the previous Gilded Age. And, you know, now we say we're in a new Gilded Age. And so I think it's a little bit appropriate that we see, you know, a kind of resurgence of a lot of these popular stories, you know, trying to get a grip on and deal with this sort of skyrocketing inequality and sense of, you know, pervasive anxiety that people have, particularly younger people. And so it becomes a very kind of compelling story to say, well, wow, there's all these structures in society that are holding me back, but really the biggest thing holding me back is myself. Mm. And if I just work harder and think positive and try to be thankful for what I do have, I can, you know, pull my way out of this situation and achieve everything that I want in life. And this is a story that people like. It's not a story, you know, that ever gets old.
So it's a way for people to feel like they have some control of their lives while we are stuck in a capitalist system that has ushered in a new Gilded Age where billionaires have multiple homes, as Oprah does, and the rest of us struggle to make our monthly rent or mortgage payments. You point out in O Magazine, one of the things that O Magazine offered were strategies for dealing with stress and anxiety at work, none of which involve trying to form a union or asking your boss for pay raise or shorter work hours. But they all involve what? Trying to basically shift your thinking so that you can accept your oppression better.
Yeah, and I, you know, parts of that chapter do get a bit snarky because I do get tired of these kinds of read. I got a subscription to the magazine, so I got the magazine for a year. Mm. And I did really get tired of these kinds of, you know, little advice columns for, you know, people and a lot of women just really struggling with horrible jobs and horrible bosses. And this is not the advice I think that will be most empowering for them. Maybe it will help them feel better for, you know, 5 minutes, but to really get the things they need to actually make their life better, they need a union, they need higher wages, they need, you know, single-payer health care, they need subsidized childcare or free preschool, you know, these kinds of things. And this is never part of the popular narrative. And I think This is a real problem.
And so among the, so this isn't just a critique, obviously, of Oprah. This is a critique of these prophets of capital who you write about in your book, including, for example, Sheryl Sandberg. Let's not forget about Sheryl Sandberg, who famously told women to lean in rather than demand their rights, meaning just be, just be more present, try to beat men at their own game rather than challenging patriarchy.
I should say the reason why I chose to write about these particular people is not because I have a deep dislike of Oprah or Sheryl Sandberg. In fact, I think they're actually pretty decent people, and they really believe the kinds of stories that they're telling, and they believe that their model really is a way to empower people and lift them up. And I think I take their stories seriously, and this is why I talk about them, because I think they have a real power to shape the public narrative. And so I think it's important that we take them seriously and actually, you know, take seriously people's desire to, you know, lift themselves up and live their best lives and the kind of feelings that they have about that, you know, journey and that struggle. But I think that in doing so, if we ignore the kind of structural barriers and, you know, real challenges that poor people face, it ultimately is a disservice to them, and it's disempowering, because when they fail, right, if we think statistically about the way the economy works, many people fail, right? We see this. Most jobs are low-wage jobs with no path to advancement. So when people fail, they end up blaming themselves if they really believe these kinds of stories of uplift, right? They end up looking at themselves and saying, I made the wrong choices, or if I had just, you know, worked harder, or if I just got more skills, or I just, you know, studied harder, I would have succeeded. It's my fault, which I think is a really the wrong message. And it's not a message that that's going to move us forward, and really, you know, particularly in this political moment.
I love this line in your book where you say, Oprah is appealing precisely because her stories hide the role of political, economic, and social structures. In doing so, they make the American dream seem attainable. If we just fix ourselves, we can achieve our goals. Now, Trevor Noah, who, you know, I agree, whose politics I agree with on almost, you know, on most issues, had an interesting piece where he basically said he loved the idea of Oprah running for president and wanted her to run because she's essentially everything that essentially everything that Trump is not. But isn't this exactly the narrative that Hillary Clinton had and basically, you know, failed to win the election because she painted herself during the campaign as everything that Trump is not? Trump was not well-read or politically experienced, whereas Hillary was. Trump was encouraging racist behavior, and Hillary Clinton had a much better position on issues of race and gender. But she, of course, failed to articulate a transformative vision for America, for the American economy and American workers, which is what Trump did. He, of course, used it to elect himself, being a billionaire who lives in a gold-plated apartment. People fell for that. But Oprah Winfrey, it seems, would promise very much the same sorts of things that Hillary Clinton would. We don't know what her politics are on economic justice, do we?
Yeah, I mean, we only have a sort of vague sense. And I think the important thing here is to really focus on the excitement among people in the Democratic Party and the sort of liberal intelligentsia or opinion makers in general, their excitement about the possibility of an Oprah candidacy, and really sort of ask ourselves, you know, is this a sign that they've really learned any lessons from the failure or the victory of Donald Trump? And what does this say about the future of trying to kind of rebuild a political movement that really does speak for working people? And for me, it's not a good sign. You know, it's not so much that we want to compare Oprah to Hillary or Oprah to Trump, because there is no comparison. It's really the question of, you know, how is the party trying to address the very deep crisis of legitimacy, you know, in this kind of people's, you know, loss of belief in the status quo, their loss of trust in politicians, right? Part of the reason why people are so excited about Oprah is because they intensely dislike politicians, and you can kind of see why. But that doesn't mean that the Democratic Party should come and say, well, we'll just solve this problem by presenting our own much better celebrity, which of course she is, right? It's really a time to get back and remind ourselves that the billionaires won't save us.
Right. I got an email literally a day after Oprah's speech from Democracy for America asking me to take a short survey where they said, Oprah Winfrey gave an amazing speech last night at the Golden Globes. It's generated talk about her running for president, and, you know, asks people to take a survey. And her the website, Oprah2020.org, is collecting signatures. And CNN had a report saying that she is actively considering thinking for running for president, which is usually a person's way of saying that that's what they want to do. You just tell a couple of friends to leak the fact that she's considering it to test the waters. And I really feel like you're right. It says a lot about the American sort of about us as a society that we would glom on to the idea of an Oprah candidacy so quickly. You know, and it's not even that lack of political experience is a huge deal, because she's clearly smart enough to learn on the job much more so than Trump would be. But of course, the question is that the question is, I mean, we're exactly so, you know, but the fact that she's a celebrity is something that, and the fact that she's a billionaire, rather, is something that should give us pause. Oprah has multiple mansions around the country. Good for her. She's earned them. But is that really the person we want? I mean, the White House should always be a step up for somebody who's president, right? It shouldn't be a step down, as it has been for Trump and as it will be for Oprah.
I think that there's an unwillingness, and this is where I get back to the sort of core point of my book. I think that there's an unwillingness to really acknowledge that there are structural divides in our society between, you know, working people and the super elite. And we really can point to the kind of structures of our profit, you know, for-profit economy that create wealth and intense insecurity and anxiety, right? And if we refuse to point to those and refuse to put forth a kind of platform to ameliorate the worst effects of capitalism, we're going to keep finding ourselves in the same situation. And I think the crisis of legitimacy will only deepen. But that doesn't necessarily mean that something good will arise, as we can see, you know, from incidents like Charlottesville. So I think it's really a critical moment for the left. But I'm also hopeful. There were a lot of people, you know, who supported the kind of policies, you know, that someone like Bernie Sanders put forth. And I think that there are a lot of young people who might be skeptical of, you know, the efficacy of an Oprah presidency to achieve the kinds of things that we want to achieve. So I'm hopeful that, you know, there are a lot of sort of younger people out there who are interested in actually building a real social movement for change. So I think, you know, it's not something I'm too worried about.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, we certainly have an issue of celebrity worship in this country. I remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor of California, it was essentially the main thing that catapulted him into the governorship was his name recognition and his Hollywood persona, regardless of what kind of a governor he turned out to be. It just seems like that shouldn't be the way one goes into political office. But if Oprah did want to enter politics, she could certainly start at a state Senate level or even just a House or Senate race and then work her way up once we know exactly what her clearly what her political agenda might be. A big part of the problem is that she has kept her political views, you know, we only know in very broad and vague terms what her political views are. She's not known as someone who is a highly political person, right?
No, I mean, she's a big tent person under the sort of Oprah tent.
Which is part of the story of Oprah.
Yeah, she's very skilled at sort of bringing us all together, which is part of the appeal, you know, and part of, you know, what celebrities do, right? They bring us together regardless of our politics, but we need politics, right? We have to actually inject politics into the equation, as uncomfortable as it might be. I mean, you know, the Schwarzenegger example, the thing that I love most about that is Schwarzenegger thought he could sort of, you know, ride in and do whatever he wanted because of his celebrity. But, you know, the nurses union stopped him cold. And really, it was all uphill going from there. So, I think there is some excitement, but I really do hope that people just start, you know, kind of thinking more critically about what we actually need as a country. And politics is messy and uncomfortable and awkward, and we often, you know, have conversations that we wish we wouldn't have, but these are necessary conversations.
And of course, what's really sad is that in her speech, Oprah talked about a really important issue, which is the hashtag MeToo, the movement that's come out of that and what women need to do. And unfortunately, that content was a little bit lost in the frenzy that, oh, somebody gave an amazing inspirational speech, let's have them for president. But really, the content of what she said was quite important, which we covered on our show yesterday. So that's kind of a sad thing. Nicole, give out a website that people can follow your work.
I actually recently created a website because I'm working on a second book. It's NicoleAshoff.com. So it's NicoleAshoff.com. And it's sort of a static site. I have my articles linked there, though,
Great.
If people want to check them out.
Excellent. We'll post a link to that from our site. Thanks so much, Nicole.
Thank you.
Nicole Ashoff is a writer and sociologist, author of the 2015 book, The New Profits of Capital. And an excerpt from her book was published in The Guardian, entitled Oprah Winfrey, One of the World's Best Neoliberal Capitalist Thinkers. And we've been discussing the Oprah 2020 campaign. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.